Hello, Marco.
Hi, Joe.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. So I would just like to start the episode by thanking our listeners and telling them that yes, everything's fine, and that Marco and I like talking to each other quite a bit still, and that maybe if it sounded like we were going to end the podcast and never talk to each other ever, ever again, that was maybe a little misleading, that everything's fine. It's just peachy.
Everything's cool.
Yes. We just have very passionate opinions about things. Fortunately for us, March came early this year. And we got a 9.1 update for the TV. And it's interesting that it's changed specifically one thing, and that is support for the old remote app was added, and it's also added in Siri support for music searches, which was missing from the original launch of the device. And it seemed like something they just didn't get together in time to ship. Now, that's fascinating because they also did the release on Tuesday with all of the other releases for Mac OS X and for iOS. They did not release an updated remote app for iOS and the watch at the same time. But then the next day they did. So that wasn't timed very well. I don't know why that is. And they also had an interview with Eddie Q that came out that morning after the tvOS update. Which was also not timed super well, because he explained many things that they were working for in the future, and so it might shed some light on what they did in 9.1, especially since 9.1 doesn't have any release notes, which is a troubling pattern.
Bug fixes.
Yes, well, not even that. It's just, would you like to download the software update? And then you can update, and then ta-da! It's 0.1 better. So I really wish they would change that, like on their website or something. Just say what it is, like at least for the press to cover, because whenever there's an update, you have to wait for 9to5 Mac or whatever it is, whatever breathless blog is going through every feature, trying to find out if they can
Aren't all
divine.
blogs
Well, yeah. So they try to divine like what's changed, and I don't really think that's a good strategy necessarily for discussing the changes to your flagship TV product. And I say flagship TV product because they still sell the other one.
breathless?
So yeah, this is it's just it's weird. It's really super weird.
Maybe like what's your experience been with the update? What have you noticed that's changed?
Well, I mean, those two things that I mentioned have changed. I haven't noticed anything in terms of like bugs or anything like that. I need to watch some more movies to see if it does the thing where it if I pause playback sometimes, it will pause the video and then drop down the movie interface for the like the your movie library view. That puts that interface on top
Right,
of
right.
your paused movie, and then you can't get out of that without like putting the device to sleep.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's really unpleasant. It's happened to me a couple times on 9.0.1. So I haven't had it happen yet on 9.1, and I'll reserve judgment. It would be nice if it said something about that in release notes, but it doesn't. So we'll see.
Yeah, I found for me it's fixed a bunch of the bugs. I haven't had a system crash. And the swiping vertically, I find, is way better now because before it was like this laborious process to be able to swipe upwards, and now it actually swipes nicely.
Could you describe that? Like, what do you mean? It just like jumped a row and then stopped, or like what?
No, like you couldn't like flick up, like you had to flick with force for it to move upwards.
Yeah, force flick.
Force flick. Yeah, that's also what we did in grade 3.
Okay. But the
but it, like it feels like it's what they intended it to be when it launched. I think maybe either my remote is junky or whatever, but they seem to have fixed that.
Okay. Because you also had a lot more problems than I had on initial launch, and I know Brad Chambers had some of the same problems that you were having. I haven't seen from him online whether or not his were resolved, but it seemed like there were a handful of TVs that were like really messed up, and then everybody else was okay. So I don't know if that was like a parts issue or some driver thing that wasn't evenly distributed or whatever, but I'm glad to hear that it was fixed without requiring you to actually swap hardware at the store.
Yeah, it seems to have just resolved itself, and a bunch of other weird little things, like occasionally I would get the sound dropping out of movies and TV shows, and it wasn't really app-specific, so that seems to be fixed. And the downside, though, is now my TV doesn't always turn on and off, which it, like, worked perfectly before the update.
Oh, so it's an issue with your CEC, turning it on and off? Well, you can also try, there's a setting where you can change it to infrared, I think.
Oh, yeah, I'll try that. But it was working flawlessly before the update, and now it's like half the time or a quarter of the time it'll turn the TV on or off.
It's very strange.
And the Apple TV is the only box I have, so it's like it was really nice just having one remote.
Yeah, well, the when I tested it on Jason's TV, when I had the initial device, it didn't work at all for CEC, for turning it on, only for off. So it seems like maybe they're still working out things with that. I don't know how they're going to resolve all of those issues, but good luck.
Yeah.
And specifically in regards to things that changed on this version and let's talk about the Siri search stuff first. I tried like a few different queries that I could think of to sort of like stress test it as fast as possible when I was trying to write up my blog post. And I was like, okay, so what are some things that might trip it up? And also I compared it against Siri's results that I would get from my iPhone 6, which is also running the latest. And Siri is mostly a server-side thing, so it should be the same-ish on both devices. It's kind of curious how many times you get different things. Doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes you'll get different results. So, like, if you use Siri and you say "video killed the radio star," iOS Siri will give you "here's what I found on the web for Video Killed the Radio Star," and then the top hit is a link to the iTunes store to buy Video Killed the Radio Star by the Bugles, which I already own. And tvOS says, not finding anything for Video Killed the Radio Star. If you say "play Video Killed the Radio Star," then Siri on iOS says, "sorry, I can't play videos," and tvOS Siri plays Video Killed the Radio Star from my library. So it's peculiar. I don't know why that is necessarily, that it behaves differently with certain context keywords on both platforms. I don't know if it's parsing it differently on the device or if the device is identified differently to the server-side component and it's like, oh, hey, this came from an iOS device and it can't play videos, so make sure you give this response whenever you hear the word video, even if it's in the name of something.
Did you try your Wrath of Khan?
No, that's actually a good question. I have not tried my Wrath of Khan to see if it does the CON. I did try different Star Trek soundtracks, and when you say "play Star Trek soundtrack" without any qualifier, it does play Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan motion picture soundtrack, even over playing Star Trek the motion picture. Which is strange because you think it would go in order or something, but that didn't happen.
Or give options.
Yeah, or give options, which it does not do. When you use the Siri stuff for music, there are no options. It just plays what it thinks it should play. Especially with movie soundtracks, it seems to trip it up too. You have to be very specific when you say soundtrack as part of the word. If you omit that at all, then it assumes it's a video.
So, yeah,
Which I don't see any other way of getting around. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying if you're having trouble, then I would just recommend saying the word soundtrack.
Yeah, I learned the soundtrack tip too because I always listen to the soundtrack to Hamilton and Siri just gets completely confused unless I say soundtrack.
Yeah, I which is even weirder because it's not like they have Hamilton as a movie you can watch. But there is another thing like with artists. Play Jerry Goldsmith works, but it gives me different results on iOS and on tvOS. And play Alan Menken doesn't work at all, even though I have both of those artists in my library. So it's weird.
Try finding Sufjan Stevens.
I don't have him in my library, so it wouldn't work. Because I don't have Apple Music. So it's all based on what's in my library.
So he has a really good Christmas album called Silver and Gold.
Okay.
And I wanted to listen to that in the car the other day. So I'm like madly yelling at my watch to find the album Silver and Gold by Sufjan Stevens. And Siri found like 80 different ways of spelling Sufjan Stevens, none of them correct.
Oh, yeah. When I did Alan Menken, I had to be very clear about how I was enunciating it because my first result was Ellen Lincoln, which is not so much. But just for. Further clarity on this issue. Play Alan Menken doesn't... TVOS says, sorry, I couldn't find Alan Menken in your music, and I was literally looking at the screen for it when it did that, and I don't see Alan Menken in your collection. Shall I play Alan Menken Radio? Is the result that iOS Siri gave me? So, I mean, it's just... It's weird. I don't understand why that's different, first of all, and I also don't understand why it doesn't work. Play Jerry Goldsmith. I got Star Trek Insurrection... music from the original motion picture soundtrack, Children's Story, which is one of the tracks, and on TVOS, I got Alien, Acid Test, which is from that soundtrack. But again, that's consistently reproducible that it produces its two different results on either device when you say, play something by this artist. I have no clue why that is. It's just weird. Because it's all server-side stuff, and it's using the same library on both devices, so I have no idea how it pulls different results for these things, other than it must have like some different, completely non-modular piece of software that's written to handle things differently. So strange.
Well, I wonder how much of it, too, is it's built thinking or presuming you have Apple Music. So do you have iTunes Match?
I don't have iTunes Match.
So are you using home sharing?
No, but all of my purchases are basically in the iTunes store. All of the tracks that I tested are purchases I made in the iTunes store. I didn't test anything that was like purchased on Amazon Music.
Okay.
Yeah. So as you know, if you don't have Match and you, if you just have vanilla iTunes, you still have access to all of your purchases you've made in the iTunes store as like a cloud download. And also it's streamable on any Apple device that's on the internet. You know, using your iPhone, even if you don't have it on your iPhone, you can stream it. If you have your Apple TV, you can stream it. Like, it doesn't require a download. So that's why I only tested with those things. And I didn't test with any tracks that I might have purchased from other sources. Because that wouldn't be fair. The other thing that's weird is that there's still no backup and restore for the device. I'm curious about when they'll add that. Not that, you know, you really have anything that you're not going to like lose your wedding photos or anything on the Apple TV, but it's curious that there's no way to save the state of like the apps that you have on the device, how they're organized. Cause right now, if an update goes wrong, like if 9.2 comes out and it hoses you, then you have to start out from scratch. And you have to go and download everything and then set it back up again.
And log back into everything.
Yeah, and it's very strange to me that this is absent. I thought it was weird that it was absent at launch, and it didn't even occur to me that it was absent until after when I realized that, hey, where is this backing up to? I was looking around, and I was like, oh, it's not going anywhere. it doesn't exist. I was like, well, with 9.1, let me go check. And sure enough, nothing. Just nothing in settings, nowhere. No device backup at all.
Well, it could be there by March.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Which will be great, because they'll keep updating things. So maybe by then, somebody can take advantage of that. I certainly hope they will ship backup and restore before they introduce the next model, because that would be awkward.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of other stuff that we discussed that's still not there. But in the interest of time, I'll just skip right to the remote, which I think is peculiar because it wasn't ever mentioned until this week. Wasn't demoed. It wasn't like a coming soon thing. It wasn't a we have an interest in this space, but nothing's happening with it yet. It wasn't like hidden in libraries or something that somebody uncovered. Like it wasn't there. And the fact that it wasn't there seemed to be a statement in and of itself that it was not the direction that they wanted to go, as far as I could tell. When Jason Snell talked to an Apple representative at the September event, he even got an actual no that the remote app would not be supported. He didn't follow. He's admitted that he didn't follow that up with is that an ever thing? But he took it to mean like an ever. But that's the sort of thing where it's just like, okay, so weird change of plans. I'm glad that they added it. I'm not sure why it took this long, particularly, because it seemed like...
Well, it's been like a month.
Well, except that it was how many years before?
Let's skip that part.
Well, it looks like they did. I think that this is... My guess is that this is a reaction. I don't think that this was part of the plan, that they just skipped it because they didn't have time. I think that this is a reaction, that they really did not want to have this remote app supported. I feel like this is a stopgap.
He said it's a stopgap.
he said that there's a new remote app that's coming. He didn't say, yeah, my bad. that wasn't the wording he used. It's just very strange. Because if they had shipped this, this rudimentary, lukewarm support that exists with the remote app, when the device had shipped, wouldn't that have changed a lot of the reviews about how difficult the setup process is, about how painful it is to log into services, because then people would have access to the virtual keyboards?
Then I think everyone would just complain about how you have to use a virtual keyboard.
Well, not really. Well, I mean, that would have just been the same as the last device.
True.
Yeah, but because literally the remote app is the same as the support for the third generation Apple TV. It's not upgraded in any significant or meaningful way. And it's also really strange how they chose to make it. They didn't update basically any of the help stuff that's on screen or any of the icons or anything for the Apple TV fourth generation. So it still says instructions for pairing with your device that are for the third gen. It still has it still has the old iTunes icon. It's weird. I just don't quite follow what they were thinking when they, because those are things where it's just text and an image. I don't understand why those wouldn't have been necessarily updated, and it doesn't seem like it's necessarily taking away resources from the TV team to update that iOS app. But I don't know exactly how it's structured, so maybe it was. It is peculiar, especially in light of the fact that the Apple TV remote app is now a featured app in the App Store. So
yeah, and I think that's an interesting thing. So, you were saying, that if people had the remote, it would have changed their unboxing and setup experience. But people would have to know that it even exists.
Yeah, which
in the general populace.
Yeah, which is why it's featured now, I think, is that, hey, guys, come check this thing out. We never talked about it before, but we should probably mention it now, because all of you seem to be really upset that you can't type in things easily. So, yeah.
I wonder how many complaints they got at the store.
I don't know. The remote app actually has not great reviews on the iTunes store now. If you pop it open and you go right to the the little featured thing. It's the first app that's listed, and we're sitting at 145 reviews, 3 stars, which is not terrible, but you know, it's Apple.
14 reviews and 2 stars in Canada.
Oh, you guys are lazy. You should complain more.
Well, we have like 1/10 of the population.
Yeah, okay, sorry. well, actually, that 145, 14, okay. You read some of these, and it's like, some people are really excited that it works at all, and so they're like, 5 stars. And then some people are like, this is really disappointing that it only barely works. 1 star. So I guess it depends on your view, but it is definitely an interesting change.
Yeah, I think it's good that they're at least this shows that they're listening.
Yeah, although it just increases my suspicion that the plan isn't really super there. So
yeah,
you know, especially in light of the fact that some of the rumors that had existed before was that the device kept getting held up by over-the-top service deals for the Apple TV service, where they were trying to make their little skinny bundle, as they call it, of packages of content to deliver to you, then decided to go ahead and release it anyways. And it seems that according to Les Moonves and Eddie Q's comments, that they don't particularly seem to have any sort of agreement on that moving forwards anymore. Les Moonves saying that Apple has cooled to the idea, and Eddie Q saying that they really think that apps are the way to go. So it's really different, and I don't know how much that played a part in why we have the device that we have, but it is different. I'll give it that.
Yeah. I don't know. I think my question would be, where are their organizational priorities?
Couldn't even begin to guess from what has happened from the outside.
It is not things that they have delivered to us this year.
Yeah, no, it's that's the weird part, is just like also in terms of the remote app, Eddie Q had an interview with John Pachowski, or Pachowski Wince. I'm not sure exactly. Sorry, John, who does not listen to this program.
I think it's Pachakowski.
Yeah, okay. John, last name withheld. He had his interview on BuzzFeed with Eddie Q, and I'll put that in the show notes. And that is part mostly concentrating on the Apple TV app side of things, but also he had his comment that we're working on a new Apple TV remote app that will give you full functionality of the Siri remote on your iPhone, Q said. We're hoping to ship that in the first half of next year. Which is weird, because that was also something that wasn't really on the table before in terms of discussions. It is something that I think many people wanted and had asked about the initial device launch, was, you know, hey, the Siri remote has basically some of the technology that you would find inside of an iPhone, and yet you have to use the Siri remote and you can't use your iPhone. And if you use the current remote app, it treats it like a D-pad when you use the touchscreen surface area. It doesn't treat it like a touchpad area. So it's all very weird. So that is mostly a different change of pace. And also the timetable, the first half of next year. Usually when Apple says something that far, like when they say first quarter, they mean the end of that quarter. When they say first half of next year, they mean the end of the first half of next year. So we're looking at probably, I would guess June instead of, you know, March. maybe it'll be March. They should just do March just to make us happy.
Ides of March.
If they do Ides of March, that would just be just the creme de resistance there, I guess. Or something. But yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah. This gets back to the whole Apple is spread too thin thing, and like, why does it take 7 months to make a remote app?
Yeah, well, Not just that, like, why does it take 7 months to make the remote app? But if you add that to the ramp up time and the current time that the device has been released, then it's like, well, why did that take basically almost a year? Because we're looking at the September announcement, the end of October release, basically the last couple days of October. Then the month of November, and then the first week of December before they added that. And then we're looking at the, you know, 6 or 7 or whatever months that remain until the remote app ships. And it's like, well, so was this part of your original plan in September that you couldn't ship by then? Or was this not part of that plan? Because it seems like that is a lot of stuff that you couldn't get together in time for October, if that was what the situation was. And then why make the decision to move ahead and ship in October if you couldn't get all of those things? Which is why I go back to assuming that they didn't mean for the remote stuff to work like this. Rather than it not making the cut. So I have no idea. I have no clue. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, why it would be like September to June before you get the device that you were supposed to have? You know? It seemed weird.
That they have no resources? That's the bulk of it. Like, this seems kind of like they threw a couple engineers on the project and then shipped it. And it's just whatever those people can get done in that time frame. But the other side is a product management piece, which is what you're getting to, which is where's the roadmap? And they don't seem to have that planned out. Maybe they do for the device, but not holistically for the rest of the ecosystem. And that's worrisome.
Yeah. I mean, and so, you know, if somebody was like, oh, well, would you recommend this device now that it has support for the Apple TV remote, the old one? Would you, you know, go ahead and say, like, this is a device you should run out and buy for $160? What would your opinion on that be?
I don't think the remote app changes whether I would recommend it. I think the stability improvements change that. And in fact, today I did recommend it to someone.
Okay.
So I think it's a really good device. I use mine every single day and I really like it. But I don't think the remote app changes that for me.
Okay, so the remote app and the Siri stuff,
the Siri stuff is a really good win, but I think for me it's more the stability is what changes it for me.
Okay.
What about you?
I'm not sure. I think I'm still on the fence mainly on whether or not somebody is already part of the Apple ecosystem. Because if they're not, then and they're not really in the market for a streamer, then I might not mention it at all. Because there are a lot of people who just don't care, who are just like totally into their cable television package or whatever. But maybe next year,
in March,
not next March, but like literally the next like fall area when they do their a device update, if they do a device update, at least they'll have a software update, I would assume, by then.
So you won't recommend this version of the product, but maybe the next one.
Well, but if you have like an Apple TV third generation and you're like really sick of it and you're burning for something else, then yeah, I would say, you know, go get this thing. I think that it's better than the Apple TV 3. I don't think there's any reason to recommend that unless you're not using any of the features on your Apple TV 3 other than AirPlay and you need a cheap AirPlay puck. That's the only reason to use that.
Yeah, I'm actually taking my old one to work to use as a cheap AirPlay puck.
Yeah, which, you know, we'll see if they ever address, like, having a cheap AirPlay puck or something in the future, like the AirPlay Express or whatever. But who knows? We should move on now and talk about another device that Apple has shipped that does things that don't satisfy some people and satisfy other people. And do you know what device that might be, Marco?
All of them?
Okay, maybe we should be more specific. Well, it's time to move on. So what would you like to talk about?
Judging by your subtle hint, I think this is where we talk about the Apple Watch.
Yeah, well, you don't know that. Mac OS 10 has a clock up in the upper right-hand corner. Could have been that. Could have totally been a segue to that. No, it's definitely the watch. So I don't have one still.
Have you changed your mind about maybe getting one?
No, nothing I've seen or heard has made me change my mind. It is still a neat toy, as far as I'm concerned. And I would rather have the Apple TV as my neat toy than have the watch as my neat toy. And you are in the luxurious position of having both as your neat toy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just Marco's Toy Palace up there in Canada.
Yeah. Well, we do have the North Pole.
Oh, so you've been an elf this whole time. You're just working at Santa's workshop, working for your Santa cook.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There are so many references clause in there. I was having a hard time following.
Well, I have a hard time making all the references. So, up there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I've had my watch more or less since it came out. I still wear it every day. I like it quite a bit, but lately I've been using it a lot less. And mostly I'm just using it as like a next meeting and notification engine.
Okay. I got to ask though about the apps, because I've seen commentary from people that basically no one is using any of the apps.
I don't use a single app.
Yeah. They're all too slow. They take too long to launch, that it's always better for people to take out their iOS device and use it.
I don't even know if that's the case, that it's because they're slow. It's that they're not useful. Like, there isn't a use case for why I need to order pizza from my wrist.
Yeah.
Or like, rent a room on Airbnb from my wrist. Those aren't what the watch is good for. And I don't know that making it faster is going to solve that problem.
Okay. So in terms of screen real estate, they wouldn't ever have the space in order for that to be good enough, even if it was fast.
It's not even screen real estate. It's the mode in which you have to use the watch, like you're holding your arm up. Mm-hmm. And there's the rumor now that there's going to be a new one in the spring with a FaceTime camera. And if you just take your wrist and hold it in front of your face as if like you're looking at it and for someone to look at you, you can do that for maybe a minute before your arm gets really, really tired.
I am really hoping that rumor is bunk. Not because I want to have a watch, but just because I would like to eventually have a reason to have a watch, and I just don't see that as one of the reasons. And as we've discussed, they have a lack of resources and focus, and I would not like them to spend that resource and focus on a FaceTime camera for my wrist.
Yeah, I don't think it makes any sense. I would much rather they make it an untethered device. I think that's where it starts to become really, really interesting.
And that's interesting because Android Wear devices have focused on that. What is it? The second Samsung Gear, I want to say, or it might be the second LG or something. They're basically on their second generation, which is the devices are a little slimmer and less clunky than they were in the first iteration. And some of them also have their own like cell service. So they're not tethered to your phone at all, which is an interesting departure from where they went with the first initial release.
Yeah, and I think having its own cell service would make it like a mandatory thing for me, and I think I would use my phone a whole lot less because of it. So I go running quite often. Use that as an example. I love wearing the watch when I go running. Use it for tracking, use it for checking my heart rate, my pace, my distance, and also use it for music controls. And I would love to not take my phone with me, except once I sprained my ankle in the middle of the woods and needed to phone for help, so now I refuse to leave without my phone. So if the watch could call people in an emergency, then that would be a really great use case where I could then leave my phone at home. But for now, I have to bring it with me. And so I know a lot of people go running with just the watch and Bluetooth headphones, but I'm so not comfortable doing that, especially here where the sun sets at like 3 o'clock p.m.
So that's weird.
Sorry?
So that's weird because it's like 4 p.m. here, but you know, you're north.
Well, we're further north.
Yeah.
It's only for like 3 days that are like that.
Yeah. But so I understand that. And I'm going to assume that if they only added a FaceTime camera, you would not necessarily feel compelled to buy the next iteration of the watch. Or would you just be like, I got to have the newest?
No, so like things I don't care about. I don't care about a FaceTime thing. I don't care if it's thinner, and I don't care if it has a new battery.
Okay.
Or a longer battery.
What if you can turn the dial thing and move around on the little hexagrid circle thing faster?
I never go to the hexagrid circle thing, so it would be pointless.
Yeah, I also hear that feedback quite a bit, is that basically no one does any of that stuff, and that watch complications are the only thing that maybe they'll have up sometimes.
Yeah, I use the complications a lot. I like them. I never use the side button to send heartbeats to my friends. That's not a thing. And I occasionally use the home button to trigger Siri, mostly while I'm driving.
Okay. Maybe in the future, you should collect your thoughts of how you thought you would initially use the device and how you currently seem to be using it, and then say, Joe, these are the reasons why you should buy an Apple Watch.
Joe, do you have lots of different meetings every day in different locations?
No, I do not.
Then you don't need an Apple Watch.
That's
literally like, I don't know how I would manage my life right now without it, because I'm just in like back-to-back nonstop meetings these days, and they're all in various places, and I'm trying to figure out where I am or like what I'm doing the next day. So like, if I go out for a beer after work and it's like 9 p.m., I can just glance at my watch and be like, oh, I have to be at work at 8 a.m. tomorrow. Better call it a night. And having that visibility is super useful. Or if I'm in a meeting, to know my next one starts immediately after, that's really great. And so I like that flexibility. But I think what that means is it's funnily geared towards the use cases where like Apple execs would be using it, and not necessarily where mainstream people would be using it. So I feel like it's almost like an enterprise device that way. It's like weirdly businessy.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I have to assume part of that is how they're using it internally at Apple. Like, I'm assuming all of the people who are on the project are actually using it to go to all of their meetings about the project. So
yeah.
It probably works great for them. but that's very weird. Anything else you would like to say about that early before we move on?
No.
Okay.
I think that's about it.
Let's talk about another well-designed product and the battery that came out. I don't really have super strong feelings about it. I just think that I wasn't in the market for a battery case before, and I am also not in the market for this battery case, so nothing has really changed for me specifically as a human being on this planet. I'm not like flipping a table over it. Whether or not it's actually any good, I'm willing to listen to a debate about, but I just don't see a debate happening.
Yeah, I think good is easy enough to measure. Does it add more life to your phone? Yes, okay, in that case, it's good. Does it look good is another question. I think it's hideous. And you can rationalize the design away all you want, but it's still ugly. And the bigger problem, I think, is that iPhone battery life, especially on the 6, is really, really horrible. And I use my phone quite a bit at work all day, and for me, it ends up dying usually by 5 or 6 p.m. every day. And if I go into the city where reception is usually much more crowded, my phone will die by 1 or 2 p.m. And so it really doesn't work well as an all-day device. And I'm talking about iPhone 6.
I gotta ask though. I thought you were in the Plus Club. You're not. You're still rocking the tiny phone, as it were.
Yeah. When I upgrade, I'm probably gonna get a Plus. The majority of the reason being it has theoretically all day battery life, and I write so many more emails now that I think it'll be a better device for that. but I'm still on my 6.
Yeah, I'm on a 6 as well. I don't really want a plus, even if it does have bigger battery. And I do have the same sorts of battery issues. I rely on my phone quite a bit throughout the day. In the morning, I use it for directions to get to work, not because I don't know where it is, but because I need to know the best route in the morning, as well as to go from work in the afternoon. And that's not a requirement for every human being on planet Earth, but it is one for me. And the other thing about it is that when you have the screen up for that long, it drains the battery a little bit. You can augment these sorts of things by leaving chargers everywhere in your life, like a car charger and a charger at work. The single biggest thing that I think Apple has done to help me with battery life is low power mode, which I really appreciate, and it has saved my bacon on many occasions, especially when I compare it to the battery life I was getting in iOS 8 with this device before. I think that this is an enormous improvement. So I'm just not sure the case is the solution for me. I think the case is probably the solution for people like my mom who go into a store and they're like, I need to have a battery case because I just need to have one. And it's like, okay, fine, whatever. And she also used to buy like holsters and stuff. And it was just like, please don't, just don't do it. But she did.
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating because I carry my phone without a case. I like that it's small and fits in my pocket. And it's just such a terrible compromise to have to get a big bulky case. And so I actually have one of those portable battery packs. I don't even know what kind it is. I got it free at a conference. And that has saved my life so many times whenever we have to go on a trip.
Yeah.
So I always have like that and a lightning cable with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I've actually done is in my kitchen, when I built it, I put the USB wall chargers in. So instead of an outlet, there's just places you can plug in USB things.
Marco.
So when I come home, there's like a micro USB for my headphones. There's a micro USB for this charger, and there's a lightning cable. And then I just like plug in all the things.
Okay. Yeah, I have I think it's just one of those things where you just like build up chargers all throughout your life and leave them in places strategically so that you can take advantage of them later. Like next to my nightstand, I've got a charger for the phone because I sleep with it on the nightstand. It's my alarm clock and everything. I have a charger that's in the car. I have a charger at work. I have a charger at Jason's. I have a charger next to where I keep my computer in case I need to sync stuff. I have...
Are they all like the little like nubbin thing and a cable? Or is it just
the one at work, I just plug into a USB port, and the car one, you plug into the car adapter. I don't have a fancy modern car that has a USB port. My 2002 Honda Accord does not come equipped with that. I also have a cassette tape adapter for listening to audio in my car. So I am cool as heck.
I have a USB port in my car. But I mostly use Bluetooth in my car. And then if I'm driving with someone who also has an iPhone and they want to charge, once you plug their iPhone in there, it now controls the entire infotainment system. And that's fun.
Okay. So you can't overrule them anymore when they
You can't
they
overrule
decide.
Them with the Bluetooth. They then have full control over the music.
That's terrible.
Passengers should never have control over the music.
No. Well, except if I'm in the car, because... Jason basically listens to country music, and I can't stand it. I just want to listen to something else.
But yeah, I'll take the Star Trek soundtrack.
Aha, see? But I don't listen to that when other people are in the car. I don't want them to think I'm a nerd. So
they already do.
Yeah, so the battery design, I just don't care for it. I wasn't going to buy one before. I'm happier with the other solutions I have in my life than with augmenting the physical size of the device any further. I have a simple black silicone case, and that is the maximum thickness I would like to add to it. The excuses for why it can look ugly, I don't buy for a second. It's Apple, and like they design all kinds of stuff that has really terrible function because it needs to look pretty. like the remote on the TV. Like, let's be honest about this, shall we? Like, there are plenty of times they've compromised whether or not something works for it to look nice. So I don't buy that this is the best solution that looks the prettiest or whatever. But it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't matter to me specifically.
Yeah, and I think it's just part of a trend of Apple design getting sloppy is the wrong word. Maybe it's rushed, or like they don't have as much oversight, or like, for lack of a better word, there's no creative director who's approving things before they go out.
But all of those things are false, because we know that there's a whole scheme of things with Johnny Ive overseeing. I can't remember their names. There's the VPs that they appointed recently, like 6 months ago or whatever.
One's hardware, one's software.
One software, yeah. So like, there are people who are looking at this stuff. I don't buy that no one's looking at it before it goes out the door.
But I feel like they're either really bad at their job, or they're doing a ton of things we don't know about yet, or they're all just like really burnt out from designing 85 watch bands that they have no time to look at these things anymore, because there's the battery case is hideous. There's the Apple Pencil with its losable pencil top.
that just cracks me up. It's like, how would you design this tiny little piece of plastic?
Well, here's the thing. Why didn't they put a female lightning port on it, and then you can just charge it from any of your 18 million lightning cables, because you have one in every location you go to, because your phone always dies?
Yeah, well, that's why they ship the tiny little adapter you can lose.
But they could have solved that by having the tiny little adapter be male-male.
Well,
and then...
You know,
and
it's,
then like your Apple
Pencil. It's Adapter and Eve, not Adapter and Steve. So the thing with the pencil, though, is like, I am entertained mainly by the fact that there are so many losable components to it. The device itself you can lose because it doesn't really secure to anything. The cap you can lose. The little tiny adapter that does the conversion you can lose. So it's just like, why? Like, if you're talking about design,
and it can break.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just like, why, if you're talking about design, why isn't this a little more cohesive? Like, it feels like these are all like, oh, and, but it needs to do this. And it's like, okay, wait.
Yeah.
Slow your roll there. Yeah.
But I feel like if they would have just made, like, the one tiny change of, instead of a male lightning connector, it was a female lightning connector, they would have solved, like, all those problems, because there would be no more losable parts.
No, but see, the problem with doing that, though, is you can't just charge it when you're sitting there in front of your iPad.
But that happens like once a month.
Mike Hurley was saying it happens to him quite a bit. So his opinion was that even though it looks ridiculous, he does use it just very carefully. I'm not happy with it as like the best looking optimum functional solution, but you know, whatever. Like, they spent all that time on it so that the logo faces up when you roll it, but it's just like, that was not like the biggest problem this device had.
It's just, there's like a series of weird things. Like, there was the graphic that I sent you where you have like the battery case, the mouse with the plug that's upside down, the Apple Pencil, and
The mouse thing makes literally no sense to me at all. Unless somebody was like, I don't want to see the port. And then it's like, well, where are we supposed to put it? And they're like, well, I don't care. I don't want to see it when it's lying there on the desk. It's like, okay, so I'll just put it on the bottom, I guess. But
but everyone's just making excuses for all this stuff instead of saying, you know what, these are really, really terrible design decisions that probably shouldn't have gone out. There are very reasonable solutions that could have solved the majority of these problems and still been aesthetically pleasing. And instead of making excuses for Apple, we should just say, you know what, these are really useful things that look really terrible or have a bunch of compromises that are more terrible than we're used to seeing from Apple.
Yeah. When everyone's making fun of Microsoft for creating compromised devices, I'm just like, you know, guys, like, people in glass houses, let's chillax. People in glass Madison Fifth Avenue houses, let's calm down. There are compromises that Apple is making, and whether or not we agree with them, there's still compromises. And I think it's totally fair to question them. Like questioning the remote, questioning the Apple Pencil, questioning the battery case, questioning the mouse, whatever. It's not questioning the MacBook, which only has one port. It's totally fine to ask why these things happen.
I can get behind the MacBook.
I can't. why can you get behind one thing that you can only plug one thing into, and that includes charging?
Because the MacBook is a new option in addition to the existing product lines, and it's a new way of thinking about what that product could be. You do not have to buy it, and they didn't build it at the expense of the other products. Whereas with the Pencil, the battery case, the mouse, the TV remote, they are the only thing that Apple makes in that section, and your only option if you don't like it is to buy something from a third party. So they're saying this is the one true way to do this thing. Whereas with the MacBook, it's this is what we see the future could be like, and by the time this expands to the rest of our product lines, we will theoretically have sorted out all of the issues people have with it, or we will all have become accustomed to that compromise.
I kind of see that differently, because I view the Pencil probably in the same category as I view the MacBook decision, but I think the battery is like, well, whatever, like it's just like a battery case. Like if you didn't need one before, then it doesn't change your life to not have it or to have it, like, so whatever. But the Pencil you need for the iPad Pro, I know you don't strictly need it, like, because you could buy it extra for $100, but like that's basically the reason that you should have one, like, just have it. Like if you don't want to draw or paint or whatever, like, you should still have one. Like it's totally valid to have one. I mean, I think it would be interesting if, like, in a year people are writing think pieces like, oh, I didn't use my Apple Pencil for a whole year because I didn't think I needed it on my iPad Pro because I'm so used to Pro things, whatever. Like it doesn't feel like it's the it doesn't feel as required with things like the battery case, but it feels like it's more detrimental to things like the iPad and to things when the Pencil isn't so great, and to things like the MacBook One when there's only that one port. Feels like it's more integral to the experience of the product. Does that make sense? I guess it was a little rambly, but integral to the experience of the product versus sort of supplementary.
I don't know that I agree. Like, I think the MacBook One is a philosophical decision. And that's something you either agree with their philosophy or you disagree with it, but you can't say the design is a failure because it was designed with intent to be that way. Just separating the argument. So the MacBook One was designed to be a single port system, and that was the theory they had behind it, and they designed it that way. Whereas with the Pencil, they chose to make all these losable components because they wanted to have the, like, plug and play charging system, but there were many ways they could have implemented that. Like, they could have had, like, a spring-loaded button that you pushed that popped up the lightning connector or something like that, so you didn't have to lose a cap. But there were tons of different ways they could have looked at doing that design. Same with the mouse, they didn't have to put it at the bottom, it could have been wherever. With the remote, the buttons could have been placed in a different way. And we're talking about the placement and aesthetics and usability of the design and not saying the design is flawed. Whereas with the MacBook, I think you're saying the concept is flawed. Does that distinction make sense?
I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I just think I have different personal priorities than that. So it might come down to it being whether or not you're the user for that device, and I might not be the user for the device. Like, so, you know, that's it. I mean, they're selling MacBooks. It's not like they haven't sold any, and they're selling Pencils.
Yeah, but if the question is like, you're not the user for that device, talks about the design compromise for the MacBook, but you can't say that same thing for the Pencil, the battery case,
the same thing for the battery case. I said I'm not the user for that device.
Yeah, but I don't think that excuses its design.
Okay, but all right. So if I have to say something, if I can't just excuse it as maybe I'm not the one for it, then I would say that I still think it's a flaw to only have one port on a laptop. You just do. Like, and whether or not that you, like, I don't, you can debate, like, oh, how many is the optimum number of ports for this device? And it's like, I just don't care. Like, more than one, less than 20. Like, I have no idea what you want. It also depends on what you want to include. Like, it has one USB-C port, which is something that is very future. It leans towards the future, basically, because there are not a lot of USB-C ports on other devices that Apple sells, except for, weirdly, the TV has a service port that's USB-C, which I think they almost did as a USB-C port to curtail anyone plugging anything into it, because they knew that people probably wouldn't have a USB-C adapter. But the 'cause, for example, the remote charges with a lightning cable, and there's no, and there's a lightning cable to regular USB-C, regular USB Series A or whatever it is they call Model A, the other adapter that ships inside the box. So it's just like, well, so obviously you don't want us to plug this into the actual TV or anything, so it must go somewhere else in our lives. Yeah.
Yeah, which makes no sense. Like, why can't you charge your TV remote from your TV?
Because it's design, Marco.
No, it's bad design. This is not design.
Well, I think they probably just don't want people to plug anything into it at all. And they probably also don't want people to leave a cord dangling around in their living room. But, you know, this is the...
But, like, literally, where are you supposed to plug it in? Into your computer?
Yeah. Like, what anything that has a USB... Model A, or you plug it into your iPhone adapter, or you go buy an adapter for it. But it's so silly.
Then, like, you have to go plug it in your bedroom.
Yeah.
And your TV is going to be, like, downstairs.
Well, I mean, I don't have that sort of layout, but yes.
Yeah.
It is possible. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, like, ignoring the layout of your apartment.
Yes.
It is a problem.
I just find it entertaining mostly because it's not like an infomercial black and white, like, boing, like, problem slipping out of my hands kind of a problem. It's just that it's just a little silly.
Is a priority that your Apple Pencil needs to be immediately pluggable into your iPad, and your remote doesn't need to be immediately pluggable into your TV for a fast charge?
Well, obviously what they should have done is put a male lightning port onto the remote, and then we'd stick it in the back.
Oh my God, could you imagine?
That would be the best!
That would actually, like, if it was like a cool little dock, and then you could just, like, let it sit in the top of the Apple TV.
Yeah. I mean, that'd
be kind of neat.
Except, you know, I'm sure people probably stack these or whatever. So you have no actual idea, like, what the clearance would be on top of everyone's device. But it is, unfortunately, they do something like make, like, one of those boxy cubes or, like, a TiVo Bolt or something, where it's just like a awkward non-conforming device case. Like, it is at least a box. So please don't actually put a male USB or lightning plug onto the remote, because I think
but then you would figure out which side of the remote is up.
Ah, yes, because
other favorite thing about the remote and bad design is the infrared port on the top is the exact same shape and size as the lightning port on the bottom, and it's black
for symmetry.
Yeah, but then I'm like constantly like jamming the lightning port into the infrared port and trying to make it do things, and I'm like, oh, that's not a hole.
Yeah. Well, that's what someone said. But the problem with that, though, is I think they really prioritized symmetry for that team. Like, whoever, like, I'm sure all this stuff gets divided up between different people, and so somebody was like, you know what, I want this to be the most beautiful museum piece you've ever seen. And it's like, well, that's not what remotes are, but sure, go do your thing.
But, like, how are all these things from the same company?
I don't know. Like, I couldn't tell you. But at least they don't do the same mistake everywhere. That would have been terrible.
I wish they would, because then there'd be some cohesion.
So you'd rather have the same mistake made everywhere, like all of your stuff charges with male ports from now on. Your
no,
iPhone has a male port, and you plug it into the side of your MacBook One into the one USB-C port. They both have USB-C now, and you have to go buy new stuff for everything else. Wouldn't that be charming? That would solve your Lightning headphone rumor.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, is USB-C and Lightning, are they going to merge into some sort of, like, weird double port? Like, is that even, like, physically possible?
Not really. I mean, Lightning, what is it? I think I saw somewhere that Lightning basically fits inside of the component, the USB-C port component. But I don't know how they do like a double thing, or if it would be any good, or if it would work with any third party plugs, which is also a concern, because the whole point of having like a universal standard, which let's not forget the U in USB, the whole point of having a universal standard is that many things can plug into it. And that's part of the reason why the A series, the Model A or whatever you want to call it, the first USB plug, like that one has been so successful and so ubiquitous, is because everyone has one. So they're just everywhere. On everything, and even though they're not good, they're not a good design, and they should be replaced. Their ubiquity has allowed that process to move forward, and that because you can't get rid of them. If you're deciding how you're going to build your new MacBook One, and you can only have one port, then it doesn't do. To have that port, because it doesn't accomplish all of the things you need it to do. So then you have to use USB-C. So I don't know. Maybe they'll add. It would almost make a little more sense if they added a female Lightning port to the MacBook One, in addition to the USB-C port. Because then at least you could, I don't know, plug in a phone and your remote and your pencil, and then you would have some stuff, and then also your headphones would go in that one, because they'd get rid of the regular headphone port. Wouldn't that be amazing? That's how they find the extra space.
If they're going to a one port MacBook and they still have a headphone port, but then they're going to move to a Lightning port for your headphones, maybe, where are you going to plug that in on your MacBook?
Everything's going to have Lightning ports in the future, Marco. They're going to replace all the ports. All the headphone ports will now
all
be Lightning ports.
Ports.
Yeah. Oh, that's not... It's, they're not even great. Let's just be real. ports are an end to a means. Like, you plug stuff
they,
in.
They literally are, yeah. In the historical definition.
Yes. You plug them in, and they do things. And the things you plug in charge, and they connect, and they do whatever they are going to do. They're happy little devices doing their happy little things. And... To the current environment of all of these different kinds of things is kind of worrisome, in the sense that you have to carry around stuff. It's not worse than it used to be in the bad old days of, like, you know, ADB ports and your serial port for your printer, which was a different kind of thing that looked almost the same. Then you had your
and your keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
What were those called? They were like P something.
Well, you're thinking of PS2, which was like ADB. ADB was the Apple kind of thing. They're the round ones that had the flat top on the rubber part, the plasticky part of the plug. And then there was the DBA 25 or DBA 15 or whatever it was, for the monitor stuff. Like, we've moved far from that kind of situation. But we have farther to go in terms of consolidating all of the new things that we've used to replace those things with, and the new things Apple has used to replace those things with. Because Apple is still saying, like, hey, you get Lightning on this one, and you get USB-C on this one, and you get, mini DisplayPort on this one, and you get, there's still shipping things that have a variety of use cases and plugs and stuff. And you can buy dongles for all of it. The magic.
Everyone has dongles. Lately I've been going to a whole bunch of different client meetings and other meetings, and we do presentations on people's TVs in their boardrooms, and everybody just has like a bouquet of dongles.
I was gonna say an octopus of dongles, but bouquet sounds a lot better. it's also a troubling aspect of design, because it's like, well, it's so pretty until you plug it in. then it's just like, why is there this white squid hanging off of my laptop?
It's their ode to the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Maybe that's the the big plan behind all of this is that it's all part of a dongle cult. So anyway,
yeah,
I think that sums up things.
Yeah,
we basically take issue with the direction of design, whether or not we agree on the direction of design. It seems like it's not consistent, and it's weird. It's weird stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't feel cohesive or focused.
No, and they make different choices, and it seems like there are different compromises that they make in those choices for different devices. So it's not uniform feeling in that regard as well, where it's not like you're said, like you criticized, like it would be nice if it was just all the same mistake everywhere. Just hopefully never the male USB port mistake.
I don't think that one's going to happen.
We hate, this is a male port, anti-male port podcast, basically. I don't know what to say.
I'm just not going to say that.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Marco. Nobody listens to the show. It's fine. That concludes our thoughts and feelings. Ta-da.
Ta-da. Is that the show?
Was there anything else you wanted to add? Theme song.
Did you ever read that article on how to make the best chocolate chip cookies?
No, because I'm not making any chocolate chip cookies, but thank you for sending it to me. the other weekend, Jason made cobbler. It was a apple and blueberry cobbler with a cookie top instead of a biscuit top. I don't like the biscuit tops. Let's just be honest about that. So I didn't know he was making it.
What's a biscuit top?
That's where they have... It's basically like you, with cobbler, sometimes you get like a pie crust top, and then sometimes you get like a biscuit top where they basically like drop biscuit dough on top of the thing.
Oh.
I don't care for that at all. It is too weird for that kind of application because it also
is
gets
that
like
a thing from the South?
Yeah, cobbler's from the South.
But here we make it with like. Rolled oats and brown sugar as the topping, like a granola top.
Well, that's more of like a fruit crisp kind of thing. Like we usually call those like oatmeal crisps or whatever.
A crisp and a cobbler.
Well, the topping, I would say, because that's what you have with the crisp topping is more like a strudel kind of a thing, where it's like a crumbly thing that doesn't actually form like a cohesive mass. And the biscuit topping forms a cohesive mass. I just find it terrible. Then sometimes people put a pie crust on top, and it's basically like a pie that doesn't have a bottom. And then with the cookie topping, you basically make a cookie dough with flour and melted butter, and then put that on top, and it's sort of like having a sugar cookie on top of your cobbler, and it's delicious. So I like that one, or the pie one, but not the biscuit one. That's just disgusting.
A cobbler, a crisp, and a crumble are three completely different desserts.
Yes.
And there's also another one called a Betty, which is a baked pudding.
Yes. You can get a brown Betty.
What's a pandowdy?
I don't know what that is.
A pandowdy is a deep dish baked fruit dessert with a flaky pie or biscuit topping. The main difference is that the topping is rolled out in the shape of the baking dish and placed on top of the fruit mixture and partially baked.
Oh, yeah. With cobbler, it's freeform.
Yeah.
But
I'm reading an article on Canadian Living.
Oh, okay. But see, I was right about the oats thing. Like, that's a crisp.
Yeah. Yeah, you were right.
Because, like, if you told me I was having cobbler and then you served me a crisp, I would just, like, flip it over. Like, it's just not the same. Like, I mean, I like crisps fine, but if you told me, like, if I was, like, full at the end of a meal and you're like, oh, save room for dessert, and I was like, okay, what's dessert? And you were like, it's a crisp. I'd be like, I'm having more mashed potatoes, thank you. It's just where I would spend my calories. Yeah.
No. I'm not a fan of mashed potatoes.
What is the matter with you?
A lot.
Marco, how do you not like mashed potatoes?
I like them sometimes.
Is it all mashed potatoes? Is it like a certain style of them? Like, do you not like the smashed potatoes where they leave the skins in? Or do you, like, what is it?
I think it's just a texture thing. Like, I had a few that were just like too soupy, and then a few that were too much like just like a they took a baked potato and smashed it against a wall.
When you say a few, I have to question, were you raised not having mashed potatoes?
Yeah, we didn't really eat mashed potatoes growing up.
Okay, so maybe that's the source, because you have not experienced enough mashed potatoes in your life to know that there are really good mashed potatoes in the world.
No, I love roasted potatoes.
I like roasted potatoes too,
Yeah, I would take roasted potatoes over mashed potatoes.
I'm the reverse on that one.
Oh, no, breakfast potatoes are the best potatoes.
I like breakfast potatoes, except sometimes people put too much onion in them. Like if you order at a restaurant and you're like, I'll have breakfast potatoes, and they're like, here's half of an onion and a couple shreds of potato, and you're like, what happened? I don't want that.
There's a place beside my house that makes them with half white potatoes, half sweet potatoes.
Ew. I
No,
don't.
they're so good, and they have like garam masala in them,
Oh, that's weird.
and so they're a little spiced. They're really good.
The only way I eat sweet potatoes is roasted in the oven with olive oil, rosemary, sage, and and some garlic. Although you want to take the garlic out because it's a little overpowering. But that's the only way I'll eat sweet potatoes, because I just find them too sweet in any other application.
I like them. I think they're also really good if you do them with like cinnamon and butter. But that is obviously counterintuitive to your complaints.
Yeah, because I just find them too sweet. Like I know that a lot of people like them that way. I can't stand it. And the sweet potato casserole that people make around the holidays, I'm just like, nope, not having it. Yeah.
Oh, but it's like your key to diabetes.
No, it's gross. I don't like it. It's like there's no texture to it. It's just like this mush, and it's so saccharine. Like I just can't take it. Like I have a real issue with things that are too sweet. I just cannot abide it. But people love sweet potatoes like that. I can't do it.